right now you have three of the four that will be going up are all hands. I think I mentioned that last week. You got a pilot, KB3HTZ, Woody Holberg. You got the commander, Stephen Bowman, KA5, DKB, along with fellow from Saudi Arabia, not Saudi Arabia, European Space, UAE, United Arab Emirates. He's going up as well. But he got a ham license in Houston, so he's got a KI5 DTV call. The only one that doesn't have it is the Russian. But you have two Americans going up. One Russian and another guy from United Arab Emirates. That's pretty interesting. Anyway, pretty much come to an end. We're at 11 o'clock. And, there's no other questions. We're going to turn it back to Roy. This is WS. All quiet, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N. Back to you, Roy.
Obito, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net, all that you do for the club. I appreciate it. I'm sure everyone else appreciates it. Thanks to everyone who checked in, participated, had questions, had answers, learned some new things. Hopefully some people out there learned some new things. That's the point of the exercise. So I hope you'll join us all again next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. As I often do, I will end this TechNet with the wise words of the guy who used to run it for many, many years, Dick, K2RIW. Be kind to each other. That's always good advice. It's particularly good advice in these weird days that we're living in right now. So, also, my favorite quote, Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep an open mind, and you'll learn new and interesting things. I am going to give myself a challenge to see if I can talk ChatGPT into giving me a reasonable puzzle for next Sunday. So tune in next Sunday when you find out whether I was able to cajole ChatGPT into doing it. One of the foibles with ChatGPT is it's programmed to be conversational, and part of that conversation is if you tell it a incorrect fact, it will assume that you are very smart and will agree with you. So that might lead to some interesting complications. But nevertheless, join us next week when I give you the further adventures of AC2GS and ChatGPT. So, this is Roy AC2GS, formally closing this episode of the Limelock Tactical Net, and wishing you all a safe and good week, and we'll see you all back here next Sunday night. This is AC2GS, and I am clear.
Yeah, Roy, CBS Sunday morning, they played a clip from ChatGPT, which said very authoritatively that Hillary Clinton was president from 2017 to 2025. Very funny.
That is unfortunately very easy to do, again, because it is an optimized artificial intelligence for conversation. It will not argue with you. So if you tell it things, it will apologize and accept it within that thread. If you delete or you move out of that thread into another thread, you basically reset reality to something closer to real. So the problem that they list on the front page is that ChatGPT can be fallible, And part of that fallibility is that it is excessively agreeable. So you could tell a 2 plus 2 is 18, and it will accept that as a given.
How did you manage to get on, by the way? I tried to create an account and get on, and it told me it was over capacity. Give me your email address, and we'll get back to you when you have room for you.
I just kept on trying. I got the same message, and about 5-6 hours later, I tried again, and it let me check in. I used my Google account as the identifier, and I've been in since then. It was clogged up at one time, so I assume that they have turned on a few extra servers. It's been excessively popular, especially since it's now free in the beta form. Eventually, they intend to monetize it like most people do with most things, and Microsoft has invested $1 billion into OpenAI. So there's going to be a lot of activity on artificial intelligence. There'll be different versions of GPT that are trained for different purposes. GPT itself is a little bit less conversational, but a little bit more consistently accurate and not as gullible as ChatGPT is. So it'll be interesting to see what the future of artificial intelligence is. A lot of people are very surprised at what it's capable of in this iteration, and it's probably going to get better. I have seen inherent flaws in it. Again, the gullibility, and you can change reality on the fly. I've been correcting it endlessly, and it accepts everything that I say. I don't know if it's real or just the gullibility going on inside of it, or what the heck it is. But it's a very interesting device. My fears are that it's going to kind of take over diagnostic medicine in 20 years.
Just taking a minute. I have to put the phone into low power mode. EchoLink iPhone battery at a phenomenal rate. That is interesting. Hey, I know you wanted to get going. If you want to get going, go ahead. Otherwise, just about a couple more things. Go ahead.
Sure, I have an extra 10 minutes or so. Let it loose.
Yeah, okay, I better identify my WB2BXL. Did you happen to read the ARRL propagation report on Thursday and maybe watch the Amethyst Bob's report? Go ahead.
No, I didn't. I always forget. Matter of fact, on my link page, because there was some discussion of the calculations from solar models, I put up a page from, I think it was the NOAA, that had graphed the predicted model activity of the sun versus the actual measurement. And it's kind of amusing that the actual measurements always are higher in intensity than the solar model's predicted value.
Yeah, I think McIntosh, I think it's his name, is the guy who predicted a very high sunspot peak and was being laughed at, maybe very happy at this point, because right now the actual, as I understand it, according to the report, is tracking closer to his model than the NOAA consensus model. You got to wonder, now that I think about it, if NOAA tends to forecast very conservatively in weather forecasting, whether that culture kind of carries over into space weather forecasting, whether their forecast is just too conservative. But there are also a lot of unknowns, as I understand it, in solar weather.
AC2GS. Yeah, these are very early days as far as a legitimate solar model, and I think anyone that takes them terribly seriously is kind of deluding himself. It's a good starting off point, and I'm sure it needs significant improvement, the same to one degree or another, reset for the weather modeling. It's gotten significantly better, especially over the short term. Long term, it still needs a little assistance. Chaos theory in action. And just because the Macintosh is winning this contest doesn't necessarily mean that his model is particularly more accurate. Now, I'm reminded, I used to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. I used to do a thing, I think, every 6 months of the top 10 guys who predicted the stocks that were going to make a profit. And they were almost always different guys every 6 months. And then I think at one point some goofy guy decided to use a dartboard instead, and, the dartboard won. So, that's the problem with chaos theory and models. I'm sure they will improve over time, but we tend to give them far greater importance than I think is warranted at this level of understanding. Well, we all know, Jim, you're not a big guy with computer simulation. Again, it's just the limitations of the tool. Chaos, if you ever go into chaos theory, it's a very interesting field of research where you can discern larger, longer-term trends, but the instantaneous results are almost random seeming. So there's a lot more work to be done. I don't know how far they'll ever get with it, but I assume that over time the prediction capability will improve to one degree or another.
No argument. I suppose my feelings remain computer modeling is a great tool. It's a very bad thing.
Well, in my humble opinion, that seems to be the problem with the vast population. People kind of divide into believing the great computer knows all and others where the great computer is full of X. Again, I'm in the middle. It's a tool. It's an implement. It's only as good as the algorithms that the theoreticians construct and implement. So I take everything with a grain of salt, and everything is a process. No one launches the perfect amateur radio station on the first day that they get their license. Usually, unfortunately, it gets better and better and better and better and better and better and better, but then at some point, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. So that's the nature of most things that human beings are involved in.
Agreed on all points. I'll stand down. Thanks for letting me interject.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing the dartboard years ago. That's pretty funny. Maybe you talked about it in B school. Believe it or not, I actually did that at one time. that is amusing. But we did catch up with the propagation report. It's kind of interesting where I think Dr. Tamasa tries to explain why propagation perhaps isn't as good as we might expect it to be. even though you sounded pretty good on 10 meters this morning, but you're saying that given the sunspot number, it may not be quite as good as expected because of the number of solar storms we've had recently causing radio blackouts anyway, kind of counteracting the number of sunspots. And you're suggesting there may be surprisingly good propagation on the higher frequencies on the night side, and I think that actually has been observed. So the solar cycle is proving to be kind of interesting. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, even though it is listed as sunspot cycle 25, which obviously doesn't mean it's the 25th cycle for the sun, it's the 25th cycle that we've noticed, early studies were abysmal. So, you know, the last few sunspot cycles are the ones where we've been able to pick up a lot of data, but there's a lot more that is required. There's a lot of seemingly superficially important facts that we really don't understand. The core of the sun is incredibly cooler than the photosphere around it. It goes, you know, the black body radiation for the sun is now blocking on what it is, something like 1400 degrees Kelvin. You know, that's the color temperature. You know, all kind of light sources have different color temperatures. More bluish light is 1500 Kelvin, but obviously right above it, it's millions of degrees, so there's something heating up the surface beyond it. So there's some good theories about magnetic restrictions and such, but they're still only theories. So there's a lot more science needed to apply to the most important object outside of the Earth to human beings.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been in relatively recent times, I think, that we've understood that, you know, the sun is powered by nuclear fusion, you know, which I think it was a puzzlement until, I think, the middle of the 20th century, is how the sun was powered and producing so much energy. You know, it's interesting. There's an amusing story from the 1920s about a woman astronomer who wrote in her doctoral thesis that the atmospheres of all stars were largely hydrogen and helium. And her doctoral advisor wouldn't sign off on the thesis unless he said, well, this can't possibly be right. This must be experimental error. And of course, it turned out to be absolutely right. I mean, I got to think that maybe her advisor wasn't married, because if he'd been married, he would have known that the woman is always right. Go ahead.
Hi, hi. By the way, correction, the black body radiation of the sun is 5800 Kelvin. There's all kinds of interesting things that I've used in the past for puzzles about the sun. The energy density of our body, which produces approximately 100 watts per second, is higher than the mass of the a given same volume of the sun itself. Is the fact that the sun is so massively energetic is more a function of its incredible mass that it's distributed over. But, you know, most people would never think that the human body has a better energy density than the sun.
Yeah, well, of course, but the problem is the human body is infinitesimal in size as compared to the sun, so can't produce as much energy.
Yeah, that's the thing that a lot of people can't appreciate. And I thought about this to ask because the difference between the mass of the Earth and the mass of the Sun is most people can't reconcile that. So you'll have people that say, every so often someone has a goofy idea of taking the dangerous nuclear waste, putting it in a rocket, and shooting it to the Sun. And, there's a lot of problems brought with that. But the non-problem is, oh, my gosh, you're going to contaminate the Sun. What's going to happen? You're going to ruin the Sun. The Sun could take a nuclear waste of half the size of the planet and burp and do nothing with it. So, again, it's people not appreciating the scale because it goes kind of beyond our evolutionary tendencies to conceive of this. That massive a difference is just unreconcilable to many people, which is, why scientists rely on exponential notation.
Yeah, I forget how much bigger the Sun is. I think there are two problems, obviously. First of all, the human body is infinitesimal in size. And second of all, the human body runs on chemical energy, not nuclear energy. And chemical bonds just don't have the level of energy that nuclear bonds have. Many magnitudes.
Well, yeah, you're knocking into E equals MC squared once again. So matter is bizarrely simply a form of highly concentrated energy. And it's a method you use to convert that concentrated energy back into just regular energy. That's the problem, but once you're able to do that, the amount of energy that you can release is incredible. That's the bottom line. But, the idea of energy density, per se, again, is another one. Talk to the average person that has any opinion. They'll probably tell you that the energy density in the middle of the Sun is 1,000 times more powerful than a human body. So, again, it's misunderstandings of scale and other factors. But, nuclear fission is and nuclear fusion, fascinating bits and pieces. You need a fission trigger for a fusion bomb. So, I don't know exactly how soon we'll get really fusion available at power generators. I tend to doubt it's going to be 12 to 20 years. It's only 20 years in our future since we were kids back in the 60s. I unfortunately feel that for a while it's going to continue being 20 years in everyone's future.
Well, the thing that I think we discussed it a couple of text messages ago, last week or 2 weeks ago, it wasn't that long ago, is this idea that it's nearly limited energy with no externality, unlike nuclear, conventional fission nuclear energy. Is what do we do with the waste? It really, as you said, really isn't practical for a number of reasons to just shoot it into the Sun. I find it hard to believe that you're going to have a source of energy with no externalities. I think there's a different engineering term. That's what economists call it. That's just about everything produces undesired, has unforeseen or undesired consequences. Go ahead.
Yeah, I understand. You know, I mean, it's like Robert Heinlein promoted the line, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Fusion, if you're able to cost effectively do fusion, it comes relatively close. I mentioned a few weeks ago on the TechNet as well that my guess is if it ever comes to fruition, at the very least, there will be loud, annoying people who will talk about thermal energy and heat dissipation and all these fusion reactors going full out will produce heat pollution. So it will generate more kinetic energy than the Earth is able to equilibrate and dissipate. So I'm sure they're going to be unhappy people down the road, but that's just the nature of humanity in general.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm skeptical just because I think nuclear energy was promoted as old, tiny bit of nuclear fuel, can run for so long and there's no smokestack or anything. And I don't think it occurred to a lot of people, well, what do you do with all the nuclear waste? Nuclear energy was supposed to be, conventional nuclear reactors were supposed to be the ultimate, and it turns out it's a big problem.
Well, I mean, in my memory, it was always we were on the road for something like fusion. I mean, my primary memories of discussions of atomic energy begin with the World's Fair up in Queens. I remember visiting the Atomic Energy Commission and getting all the booklets and reading them. And I think at that point, although they were promoting, promoting radiated food, which actually came into being, but you won't hear about it anywhere. No one mentions it. It just goes on quietly in the background. It's safe, but if anyone mentioned it, probably there'd be a lot of people marching to stop it. I think most people who are aware of the concept of nuclear fission understand that most fission byproducts tend to be real dirty and difficult to deal with. And they have kind of come up with interesting ideas that amount to basically encasing it in an inert glass-like material and burying it deep into the ground with a big sign saying, for God's sake, don't dig this up for another 10,000 years. So I think the technology people knew about the limitations, but they thought that they could just bury it.
Very literally and figuratively, perhaps.
Yeah, I sort of understand, and to this day, there are people who kind of say that, well, you know, if you just kind of bury it really deep for only a couple of hundred years, by then it's only slightly terribly dangerous. So I think no one really thought of fission as a long-term solution. It was a stopgap between coal and nuclear fusion. That has sort of always been since the 50s, as far as I'm aware, the ultimate path of energy independence. Again, how that works out, how you farm either the tritium that's necessary as part of the reaction, or somehow get helium-3 someplace, like flying in the moon, I don't know. But those are important aspects as well, as standard nuclear fission electrical generators are taken out of service, your source for generating tritium is diminished. So that's another problem. So, you know, there's always problems. But that's probably a good thing for people who go into engineering.
Yeah, well, you know, it's something I thought about also. One of the, you know, you start looking at, you know, some of the employment forecasts for the next 10 years or so, and one of the fields that's declining is, you know, opportunities in nuclear engineering because of all the, you know, commercial reactors that are being shut down. And, the first thing I thought of was, well, if fusion energy is practical and starts being developed, you know, that's going to turn around and maybe, you know, maybe it'll be a viable field for, you know, the kids to consider studying again, because there might actually be jobs doing that.
AT2GS. Well, I mean, that's always the nature of technology and employment. Jobs go into and out of existence. You have to be flexible, you know, and occasionally you get a second life. Guys who were geniuses at Fortran were not, at COBOL, were not terribly worth anything in the 90s when everyone was shifting to Delphi and C and other languages. But when they had to retrofit 2000, you know, 2001, 2000, whatever it was, and rewrite the software to allow for the changing century, then all of a sudden guys with Fortran and COBOL training were worth mints. So, you know, unfortunately, you can't rely on any field for the rest of your life. Some fields kind of fade away. You know, all the people that made buggy whips, I don't think there's too many job slots available for buggy whips anymore. So you have to go with the times. It seems cruel. I understand people don't want to be retrained for a job that they didn't plan on when they were growing up, but that's life.
Yeah, it is. It really gets interesting. I think I'm getting kind of tired here. I find this whole thing probably be my last round here. Whole thing with the electric cars interesting. Oh, well, we're going to solve the problem with electric cars. Well, all that really does is take all those ICEs, internal combustion engines, off the road and reduce the energy with fossil fuels. You're not going to have nuclear plants anyway. At point sources of pollution, which, again, is a stopgap. You know, but it doesn't actually, you have to produce the energy somewhere. You know, you're going to use all electric cars, you still have to produce the electrical energy somewhere using another form of energy.
Well, the underlying theory is that you can do it more efficiently and effectively in a large industrial situation as opposed to individual gas tanks that might be properly tuned, might be mistuned, might be malfunctioning and such. This has all happened before. Apparently, GM had released something called the EV1. It was probably the first big electrical vehicle release back in the 90s. For one reason or another, they didn't actually sell the cars. They leased the cars, and then they had cold feet and apparently changed their mind about the profitability and just kind of killed the entire thing. There were a lot of people who had leased the cars who pleaded to buy them from GM, but they basically just threw them in a metal shredder and made them disappear. So I don't know how much of this is marketing and how much of this is real. I think it's a little too much marketing. I certainly know that good old Elon is 99.9% marketing. You know, he pulled autopilot out of his backside to put the stock as high as it's going, because it's really conceived of as a technological stock, not a car manufacturing stock. The price-to-earnings ratios, which are infinity, are bizarre for a car manufacturer. So, and I think everyone's coming to that conclusion. That's why, if anything, I would short Tesla. I would certainly not invest in it at this time. Certainly, Jim.
82 VHD. Great little topic you happen to hit on, the EV1 GM. One of the neat things about that project was you accurately portrayed the part of it that you spoke of. But what's little known about that project is they made a small portion of those cars that had an onboard generator, so it could recharge its batteries and operate as, I think you call it, a series hybrid. I don't know if I got the right term on that. And it worked so good that they recalled everything in question, just like you said. And I think it was realized that you could not only power your car through the generator on the car, but you could power your house via the car. And you know, it sounds all conspiratorial and stuff, but if you look into the story of that vehicle and its demise, definitely a troubling story of successful technology that's been removed from our access. There's lots of little stories about that kind of stuff that all sound. One is pretty well documented. Over to Roy.
Yeah, it was an interesting device. It certainly wasn't the perfect device. They were using lead-acid batteries. That was before the real innovation of lithium-ion, which kind of improved a lot of aspects. I don't believe in the kind of perpetual motion aspect, that it could produce more energy than it expended. That's the violation of the second law of thermodynamics. And the universe is very strict with their laws. So I don't quite buy the over 100% energy efficiency claims. I think in addition to the pure lead-acid cells, they also attempted a hybrid situation with a combustion engine as well. You know, it's business doing what business does. Capitalism is useful in some ways and terrible in others. They optimize profit. They don't optimize efficiency. They don't optimize your quality of life. They're optimizing their profit. So you have to kind of build in external constraints unless you want Ayn Rand to run the world.
Agreed, but correcting, I wasn't insinuating some kind of weird perpetual motion machine that they had done. They made a version of that car. If I recall correctly, they extended it by 10 inches and were able to incorporate a generator on board that was both efficient and clean and able to not make magical energy. You made energy out of, I think it was a turbine, if I'm not mistaken. And they were able to make energy cleaner and cheaper than a power plant on site. So you could power your own car with various forms of liquid energy that you carry in a bucket versus in a expensive, filthy battery. And they were like, this is not, we can't let this really happen because there's too much money to be made in other sources. And the the really odd thing of recalling all the cars and crushing them is almost confirmation of the story is, has some validity.
Well, I think the reason was against profit. They had decided, looking at the numbers, that it was more profitable to make internal combustion engines than to make electrical vehicles. And their job is to maximize their profit margin, so they had to scuttle with it. And, you know, it fits in well with the fossil fuel industry, who agreed with them and assisted them in that rationale. Again, have a problem, you know, power generators are power generators. There's nothing inherently more efficient based on anything I know about for the EV1. There was some technology that might have been implemented. I'm sure it's implemented in the Tesla, in that it probably has a device that kind of stores kinetic energy, and when you apply a brake, rather than just heating up the wheel, you know, friction stopping it, you lose it in heat, it converts it to kinetic energy and then somehow feeds it back into the system. So there's that efficiency saving aspect, but I'm not quite sure about a power generator that's inherently more efficient than one that can be built at an electrical generator station.
I don't know if it was a more efficient, but it was efficient enough to the commercial generation that it worked, and it worked on a wide range of fuels, so you could buy whichever energy was most cost efficient at the time. And that was the economic decision making point at the end user. And I think that's what was found to be unacceptable. If you could run your car on, plug it in electricity or naphtha or gasoline or diesel or whatever was cheapest and most effective at the moment, that puts the decision-making position on somebody else other than the big wigs. And it was a very interesting story. We should all learn more about that story. I think we haven't heard the full of it. Leave it at that. You guys can go back to your conversation. Thanks again for letting me interject.
Okay, Jim, as always, you know, feel free. So, Frank, it's 11:45. I'm sure you're tired. I'm sure I'm tired. So thanks for the chat, and have a good week, and I hope I have an opportunity to talk to you again next Sunday.
Yeah, as long as Echo Link works, and it has for the last couple of weeks, I will in all likelihood be on next Sunday. Enjoy the chat. And yeah, it wouldn't be the first time, if that's true, that GM did something like that. Of course, they were actually criminally convicted, as I understand it, back in the 1940s for buying up all the Los Angeles trolley systems and closing them down to replace them with GM buses. And that's actually proven in court to be a criminal conspiracy. So if that is in fact what they did, and I'm not a big fan of conspiracy theories, it is actually plausible. They just probably had better lawyers this time. 7-3. Have a good night. I do have stuff to do in the morning. WB2BS.
Okay, very good, Frank. And, you know, to this day, Elon Musk sort of pulls it a little bit more passively. He wanted to screw up a few major mass transit policies, so he invented the loop. Basically, it was invented in the 1930s, I think, So he reinvented the loop, and everyone got distracted, and all the monorails and high-speed trains weren't built because everyone was blathering about the loop. So everything is new again. History repeats itself. Have a great week, Frank. 73, I am clear.
Hi.
KD2 VHT clear.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. Good morning, sir. Time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 5:01 a.m. Cloudy. Temperature 38 degrees.
The
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 6 a.m. Temperature 37 degrees.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 7 a.m. Cloudy. Temperature 37 degrees.
I'm going to go to the next one.